everyone, welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're going to be exploring something pretty fascinating and maybe a little bit controversial.
A topic that I think often gets oversimplified.
Yeah, and it's the history of gender and sexual diversity. And it's something that goes way, way back, further than a lot of people probably realize.
Yeah, I mean, beyond just, listing off different identities, it's about understanding how those identities have been seen and treated, over time across different cultures.
Mm.
It's really about looking at how those perceptions have led to the prejudice that we see today.
Exactly. And our deep dive today is inspired by this article I found on the Church of Tinkerbell website, and it's called The History of Gender Identities and Sexual Orientations Beyond the Binary, Understanding Prejudice and Society. And it really kind of got me thinking about how acceptance and prejudice have always existed alongside each other.
Yeah, and it's that tension that we're going to try to unpack today. It's not a simple, straight line from darkness to light. It's way more complicated than that.
Yeah, definitely. So let's just jump right into it. The article starts by talking about ancient times. And to be honest, I always thought that things like non-binary gender identities were pretty modern.
Oh, that's a really common misconception.
Yeah.
Actually, the article highlights that, these ideas are far from new. Like, for example, think about the Two-Spirit people and a lot of indigenous North American cultures. They weren't just accepted, they actually held sacred roles in their communities, embodying both masculine and feminine spirits.
Wow, that's really incredible. I mean, that completely changes my understanding of how long these ideas have been around.
Yeah, it really challenges that idea that Western society somehow, invented non-binary genders.
Right.
And it wasn't limited to just North America either. Like, you have the Hijra community in India who've been recognized for millennia and often have held spiritual significance as well. Or you look at ancient Mesopotamia or Egypt. They had deities like Yunnan and Hapia who just totally defy strict gender categories.
So it sounds like we're seeing this acceptance woven into the fabric of these societies all over the world going back centuries, which makes you wonder, what changed?
Yeah, that's the big question, right?
Yeah.
And that's where I think things get a little bit more complex.
Mm-hmm.
The article points to a shift that happened as certain patriarchal structures started to gain more and more prominence and power.
When we say patriarchal structures, can you break that down a little bit for our listeners?
Sure. So essentially, we're talking about systems where men hold most of the power and authority, and these systems often rely on very rigid gender roles to maintain that power. So anything that challenges those roles, like gender fluidity or same-sex relationships, is seen as a threat.
So it's not just about individual prejudice, it's about these larger systems that benefit from keeping things the way they are.
Exactly. And that's where the article brings up another really important factor: colonialism. European colonizers came in and imposed their own very strict binary systems onto the cultures they encountered. And they often violently suppressed the diverse identities that already existed.
It's heartbreaking to think about the impact this had on so many people. The article specifically mentioned what happened to Two-Spirit people. Their identities were actually criminalized.
And it wasn't just about individual identities either. Entire social structures were completely disrupted. Take the Hijra community, for example. Under British rule, they faced increased marginalization. It was a huge shift.
So colonialism definitely played a role, but was there anything going on within these cultures themselves that contributed to suppressing diversity? I mean, did colonialism just make existing tensions worse?
That's a really complex question that historians are still trying to fully understand. It's rarely a simple either situation.
Mm.
It's entirely possible that some cultures were already having internal debates or power struggles around gender and sexuality long before Europeans ever arrived.
So we're looking at kind of this convergence of factors, power structures trying to stay in control, colonialism coming in and enforcing new roles, and maybe even some internal tensions that already existed within some of these cultures.
Right. And in the midst of all of this, the article highlights another force that shaped perceptions: religion.
Yeah.
A lot of the world's dominant religions, as they evolved, developed stricter interpretations of gender roles and condemned homosexuality.
But weren't some of these same religions actually more tolerant in the past? The article mentions some examples of acceptance in early Islamic societies, for example.
That's true. Even within a single religion, interpretations can change so much over time and across different regions. For instance, Hinduism has these ancient texts that embrace fluidity, but certain practices became much more homophobic under the influence of colonialism and Victorian morality.
So it sounds like we need to be really careful about making any kind of sweeping statements about the role of religion. It's clearly not this monolithic force. It's been used to justify and to condemn diverse identities throughout history.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes this whole topic so fascinating. It's not about pointing fingers or finding a single villain or hero. It's about trying to understand this really complex interplay of power, culture, and belief.
Yeah, for sure. And we've covered so much ground already just in this initial exploration, from this ancient acceptance to the rise of all these different suppressing forces. It's clear that this history is far from straightforward.
Absolutely. And I think it makes the fight for LGBTQIA plus rights in the modern era even more remarkable.
Yeah.
Because despite centuries of oppression, the spirit of diversity never really went away.
And that leads us to the next chapter, the resistance and the progress that emerged in the 20th and 21st centuries. And we'll be diving into that fascinating story in part two of our deep dive. Love is love, no matter who. Every shade, every size, every truth. We'll fly like Peter through the sky with open hearts that never die. So let's hold on and take a stand. Love is our Neverland.
Welcome back to our deep dive. You know, last time we talked about how complex this history really is.
Yeah, we saw this ancient cultures embracing gender and sexual diversity, and then these suppressing forces coming in and changing everything.
Right, and how religion played such a big role in all of that.
Yeah.
So it kind of sets the stage for what we're going to talk about today, which is resistance. Because even with all of that pressure, that desire to be your true self, it doesn't just vanish.
So where do we start to see those sparks of resistance in modern times? The article mentions something called the Stonewall Riots.
Oh yeah, Stonewall was huge. 1969 in New York City. It wasn't just a protest, it was a full-on uprising. Decades of police harassment targeting LGBTQIA plus folks, and especially the most marginalized people in that community, boiled over.
The article specifically mentioned trans women of color, like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, and how central they were to Stonewall.
Absolutely. They were key figures. It's so important to remember that Stonewall wasn't just about gay rights. It was about challenging this whole system of oppression that targeted anyone who didn't conform to these strict norms around gender and sexuality.
So it sounds like intersectionality was a big part of this movement right from the start.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So how did Stonewall kind of ripple outward? Did it directly lead to the pride movements we see today?
Well, the first pride marches were held actually just a year after Stonewall. They were commemorating the uprising, but they were also making this bold statement demanding visibility and equality. Yeah. It was like saying, we're here, we're queer, and we're not going anywhere.
And that message has resonated so powerfully across the globe. But it wasn't just about visibility, right? There were some real legal and social changes that came out of this movement.
But definitely. The fight to decriminalize same-sex relationships was a long and hard one. But we've seen some huge progress. Like in the U.S., there was that landmark case, Lawrence v. Texas, in 2003. And that finally got rid of those outdated sodomy laws.
And the article talked about similar battles being fought in other countries, too. Like in India, they had the Navte Singh Johar v. Union of India case in 2018, which also decriminalized homosexuality.
Yeah, those were major victories for activists who'd been fighting for decades. I mean, can you imagine how that must have felt?
I can't even imagine. These legal victories, they really paved the way for another huge fight, the battle for marriage equality. It's crazy to think that just a few decades ago, the idea of same-sex marriage being legal in so many countries was, like, unthinkable.
It shows what sustained activism can do. Change can actually happen, even when it seems impossible.
I love that. So the Netherlands was actually the first country to legalize same-sex marriage way back in 2001, right?
Yeah, they were pioneers in that. And then in 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court made that landmark ruling in Obergefell v. Hodges, affirming the right of same-sex couples to marry across the entire country.
That must have been a huge moment for so many people.
Oh, it was. It was a moment that many people thought they'd never live to see.
It's amazing to see how much collective action can actually shift the tide. But even with all of these victories, it's obvious that prejudice and discrimination still exist. It makes you wonder, what is it that fuels this persistent fear of anyone who's different?
Yeah, the article dives into some pretty uncomfortable truths about that. You know, we already talked about patriarchy and how it sees anything that challenges its rigid norms as a threat.
Right. So gender nonconformity basically disrupts those power structures.
Exactly. And then you have the lasting effects of colonialism.
Right.
It's not just about the laws that were imposed, but also the internalization of those values in some cases.
Right. It's like the colonizers have left, but their prejudices are still lingering.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're even being used by those in power today.
Yeah. And that's where religion comes in again.
Well,
while a lot of faiths have teachings that can be interpreted as inclusive, some interpretations have been twisted to justify some truly horrific acts against LGBTQIA plus individuals.
I've always struggled with that. How can something that's supposed to be about love and compassion be turned into a tool for hate?
It often comes down to power and control. Some religious leaders use fear and anxiety. They say that diversity is a threat to society, and they use that to hold onto their own power.
Which brings us to, I think, a more fundamental human flaw, the fear of the unknown. If you're never exposed to different ways of being, it's a lot easier to fall prey to those fears.
Right. And the erasure of LGBTQIA plus history from our education systems plays a role in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
If we're taught that everyone has always fit neatly into two boxes, then anything outside of that feels dangerous.
It creates this vicious cycle, fear leading to exclusion, leading to more fear. It's like we're programmed to be afraid of what we don't understand.
Unfortunately, that's often the case.
Yeah.
And then there are people who exploit those fears for their own benefit. We see this with authoritarian regimes all over the world. They use LGBTQIA plus people as scapegoats to gain more power.
Yeah, you see it in their rhetoric all the time. They say that LGBTQIA plus folks are a danger to children, to families, to society as a whole. It's a tactic that's been used forever, but it doesn't make it any less harmful.
It's really scary when you think about it. It's like a repeat of history. We saw it during the Nazi era with the persecution of homosexuals along with other marginalized groups. And we're seeing it happen again today in countries where leaders use homophobia to advance their political agendas.
It's definitely a reminder that the fight for equality is far from over. We can't get complacent.
Yeah, the progress we've made can be so easily reversed. But even with all these challenges, there are also glimmers of hope. The article points to some positive trends that are happening both legally and culturally that suggest a more inclusive future is possible.
I think we could all use some of that hope right now. So in part three of our deep dive, let's talk about those signs of progress. Because even in the darkest times, that human spirit, that drive for connection and acceptance, it always finds a way to shine through. So we've been talking about this really complex history of gender and sexual diversity and, you know, all the challenges that people have faced.
Yeah, it's been heavy, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. But we ended last time on a note of hope, and I want to dive into that a bit more. What are some of the positive trends that the article talks about?
One of the most encouraging things is the growing momentum towards legal recognition and protection for LGBTQIA plus people. We're seeing a ton of new legislation being passed all over the world.
Yeah, the article mentioned banning conversion therapy, which, like, is kind of shocking that something so harmful still exists in some places.
You know, right? It shows how deeply rooted some of those prejudices can be. But the fact that more and more countries are outlawing it, that's a good sign.
It's a testament to those activists and allies who've been fighting so hard.
Absolutely. And it's not just about banning bad practices. It's about actually affirming diverse identities.
Right. So what does that look like?
Well, more and more countries are recognizing non-binary genders and making it easier for trans people to update their legal documents. You know, so they match who they are.
Those kinds of changes might seem small, but they probably make a huge difference in people's lives.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing basic human dignity, you know?
Yeah, but laws are only part of it. How do you change the cultural attitudes that lead to prejudice in the first place?
I think education is a big part of it. We need to teach accurate and inclusive history in schools so that the next generation grows up with a better understanding of the world.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Imagine if kids learned about two-spirit people alongside traditional gender roles, or if they studied the Hijra community as part of Indian history. It would totally change things.
It would normalize diversity instead of making it seem unusual or taboo. And it's not just formal education either. Representation in media literature, you know, all forms of cultural expression that matters too.
Yeah, definitely. We're seeing more LGBTQIA plus characters in TV shows and movies and more books with diverse protagonists, but there's still a long way to go.
For sure. We need more diverse creators telling their own stories.
And more support from those studios and publishers to help those stories reach a wider audience. You know, listening to all of this, it makes me think about something you said earlier about how power structures often see diversity as a threat. But what if embracing diversity was actually the key to a stronger, more resilient society?
Oh, that's a really interesting thought. What if instead of being afraid of difference, we saw it as something that could actually make us better?
Exactly. Different perspectives, different ways of thinking, different lived experiences, all coming together to create something more vibrant and more dynamic.
It's like we've been holding ourselves back by clinging to these rigid categories.
Mm-hmm.
What if letting go of those limitations could actually unlock so much human potential?
It's a powerful idea. And it kind of ties into that thought-provoking question the article asked. If love and acceptance have always existed alongside prejudice and discrimination, what will it take for them to finally win out?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
It's a question for all of us, I think. It's not just about changing laws or policies. It's about changing hearts and minds.
It's about recognizing our shared humanity, celebrating our differences, and building a world where everyone feels safe and valued and empowered to be themselves.
That's a future worth fighting for. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into such a complex and important topic. And as always, we hope you learned something new and maybe even feel a little bit more hopeful about the future.
Love is our-